6:06, so I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. This is the Extension Education Committee meeting. This is March 12th. We have supervisors are present except for Supervisor Underhill. Right? Am I missing him?
That's four.
Danny has to be excused, remember? He said he wouldn't be able to make it.
Yep. The two youth in governance are here? Okay. Ready to start. Certificate or certification of compliance, Teddy?
Yes, the meeting was posted on February 27th and March 4th.
Okay. Our featured program tonight is Natural Resources Education Update.
So let me introduce to all of you who will remember, some of you will not, some of you in the room will know. Andy Yench is our natural resources educator, and he serves the, I'm going to get it right, Andy, the Fox and Root Pike water basins.
Right.
Which includes Kenosha County. So although he's housed physically in the Milwaukee County UW Extension office, his responsibilities for education include Kenosha County. So though we don't see him on a regular basis, his presence is felt in so many ways, and so it's a nice opportunity for us to bring Andy here at least once a year to update you as committee members to be aware of the work that he does on extension, for extension on our behalf. So Andy, thanks for being here. I'm looking forward to that update.
Thanks for the invitation. Now, when should I wrap up again?
Let's say by 20 till.
Okay. Well, thanks for inviting me, everyone. I do see some familiar faces here, so that's nice, and a few new faces. So I've prepared a different talk, I hope so, more or less from last time. And I thought I'd just roll through these slides kind of slowly and kind of intermixed with the slides. I've got some handouts I can pass out. And my goals would be to talk about the program that supports the work I do and talk about the work I do. And I'll then leave it open for questions and stuff. So I'll just keep moving. So can everybody see that, or should I move it a little bit? Is it okay? All right.
Andy, it just occurred to me, because you don't know everyone, we can introduce ourselves so you know who the supervisors are in the room and who are staff.
Absolutely.
And who are county.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
Denver, yeah.
All right, well, he knows me, so.
Okay.
I'm Kim Brunig.
Good to see you again.
District 21, yep. You had an awesome program last year.
Oh, thank you.
Erin Decker, District 22.
Emily, I'm the governor's member.
Sure.
Jeannie Liz Christensen, Consumer Board of Culture Educator. Bethany Sarcy, 4-H Program Assistant.
Mike Skolitsky, District 19.
Chris Mason, Public Works Director in Development Services.
I'm Ashley
Kemyani,
Youth Development.
Rick Dodge, Supervisor, District 5.
Good to see you guys. All right. So let's see. So I am actually one of, I think there's 11 of us now. This indicates there's 12, but the area of the state designated number one is currently vacant. And actually, the area designated number 12 is also, oh no, that's me.
That's
right. We did account for our other vacancy. So this is our most recent version. So there are currently 11 people with the title of Regional Natural Resources Educator. That's my title. Last year, I think that was my title, maybe the year before, or the last time I was here with you, I called myself a River Basin Educator. And that's what I was for like 10 years. And that's when we kind of designated our areas by the major river basins in the state. But when we switched to this model, we kind of took a county focus. And so my counties are the ones in the color with the number 12 over it. But I'm based in Milwaukee County, so I kind of share Milwaukee County duties with educator number 11, secret agent number 11. But I put this up there to give you a connection with the larger program that supports me and to inform you on the name of that program. It's the Regional Natural Resources Education Program, UW Extension's Regional Natural Resources Education Program. We're based in the Community Resource Economic Development Program area. That's our home program area. And our home base on campus, in university parlance, what we call it is our campus-based center. You can barely see it there, but it's the in the lower left corner, ERC, that stands for Environmental Resources Center. And that is my home center. That gives me access, and you, through me, access to our publications unit and our survey unit, very skilled practitioners in both of those areas. And speaking of publications, that unit helped me work with the lead author on this. I'm not the lead author, but this is one of our recent publications called Help Stop Polluted Runoff, so feel free to take one of these. It's an example of the kind of work we can do, and that one just came out like 6 months ago. It's available at the Learning Store now, Extension's online publication service. Also, I had another slide in here just to talk about that Environmental Resources Center. Again, it is a campus-based center. It happens to be located in UW-Madison. It gives us access to those resources and a lot of specialists who have either 100% university appointments or partial extension university appointments. This is my program again, the Regional Natural Resources Program, and this is right off our website. These are the focus areas we have, water, forestry. We have several educators working on Great Lakes issues. They're funded through a federal grant. The other programs are funded through state grants or contracts with the Department of Natural Resources or some hard extension dollars. Then we are connected with our historic river basin programs. I still do some of that work. And we do general natural resources education. Mostly though, my work is dealing with water. In this county, probably the person I connect with the most is your county employee, Dan Treloar. Dan provided this slide. This is an example of work he's done. And Dan helps me out a lot by providing information about the projects he's up with so I can inform other people in the region about, you know, the great work that's happening in Kenosha County and use slides like this to educate people about ways they might want to stabilize their stream banks. I used this at a workshop last year on the Fox River. And I'll pass that around now. So last year I helped kick off a event that was called the Fox River Summit. It was a watershed conference that was trying to connect people along the Fox River in Illinois with people in Wisconsin. The group that sponsored it was a group that I helped kind of grow and facilitate, the Southeast Wisconsin Fox River Partnership. I'll pass this around. This year I have not been so involved, although we are still maintaining their website, which I do. But this is a good opportunity to talk about those watersheds because most of the work I do, I try to connect it with the watersheds in the region just because that's how our Regional Planning Commission is looking at resource management. A lot of environmental issues come down to what watershed you're in. So this map was produced at that conference last year, or produced for that conference last year, and I like it. Even though it's a little bit small, I know that you'll have a little trouble seeing the whole thing, but it shows the entire Fox River watershed. So this dark line here is the Wisconsin-Illinois border. And you can see we are the headwaters for the Fox River. So we're in Bristol. So we're over on the line, over right about where my finger is right now, in the Fox River watershed. Once again, in the headwaters. In Wisconsin, this is a recreational river. As you know, there are some flooding issues. But in Illinois, the river really takes on a different character. It becomes an important river for recreation in a much bigger way because of the chain of lakes here. Millions of dollars in people's discretionary income go into boating and fishing and lodging in this area, restaurants and the like. And then downstream, the river serves as a source of drinking water for folks in the basin. And this is a very, very heavily populated basin. Eventually the Fox River pours into the Illinois, which pours into the Mississippi and the Gulf of Mexico. So it's actually not a Great Lakes watershed, even though it's so awful close to Lake Michigan. And in fact, the watershed that abuts the Fox River in Kenosha County is the Des Plaines River, which is also not a Great Lakes watershed. These other watersheds I also work in. I think I've got some slides on those as well.
Can you point out St. Charles there in DeKalb County? King County?
You see it, I'm not as familiar with it.
Between Aurora and Elgin.
Elgin.
I gotta go.
Oh, is that right? Down to Fox River?
Oh, my gosh.
Have a nice trip.
Yes, I want to start sailing it.
Wow.
All right, so keep it moving here. So much of, so I've established that I focus on watersheds when I try to do programming about water protection. And most of the time when I'm talking about water protection, I'm talking about stormwater. That's the big issue of the day. And this is a slide I use frequently when I talk about this, either in rain gardens. Just the other day, I was at the Spring into Gardening, and I gave a presentation on rain gardens. We were just down the road at the Paddock Lake, and I think I used this slide. This is designed to show, sort of in a nutshell, why we have stormwater issues now and did not in the past. And basically, it comes down to development. When you have an undeveloped area, a lot more of the water soaks in. 56% becomes groundwater. When you develop an area, you lose that. And these are general numbers. I always tell people that. They come out of the Maryland Center for Watershed Protection. But we're looking at less water going into the ground and more running off. And it's that runoff that becomes stormwater that creates problems of pollution and also flooding. Water goes into these storm sewers, eventually fills our ditches and streams, overfills them, and creates all kinds of problems. I won't go into all the details here, but it gives you a flavor for if you had attended one of my sessions, you would have gotten that. So what we try to do, though, is not so much tell people why things are screwed up. It's to tell them what they can do. And so rain gardens has become one of our program area focuses. I'm talking of my whole cadre of natural resource educators, my colleagues. And it's interesting, it just occurs to me now that the first time I heard about rain gardens was about 20 years ago. It was from an employee in Kenosha County. It was your former land conservationist, Pam, I think was her name. But she learned about them. They were doing them out on the East Coast and brought the idea here. And so it's kind of neat that here we are again talking about rain gardens. So I helped cultivate a rain garden program that is not happening this year. I'm a little disappointed. The funding just wasn't there. But in Kenosha County, there's an organization called the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network. And Root Pike Wind for years has had a program where they provide native plants and design assistance for residents who want to do rain gardens. And I've helped them develop that program.
Is it technically a garden if there's no plants?
Yeah, sure, it is. Yeah, this one, it's flooded. The plants are new, so you can't quite see them there. But this certainly shows how it holds back water. Rain barrels have the same benefit as rain gardens in terms of managing stormwater, so I thought I'd put this here. We're getting a little more sophisticated in how we talk about rain barrels now. It used to be it was kind of just direct your downspout into it, but we have recognized that that creates a host of problems. Mm-hmm. Barrels tend to fill up very quickly and then they start to overflow. So now my recommendation is when people do a rain barrel, they buy one of these devices called diverter. And the barrel itself is airtight, so more or less airtight. It's got a little escape valve for air, but not a very big opening. When the water level in the barrel rises to the height of that pipe, it backs up into the downspout and it fills the opening in the downspout. So if you get another rainstorm, the water can no longer flow into the barrel and cause it to overflow. It instead goes into the bottom part of the downspout, continues on its merry way. So this is a nice way for people to avoid some of the problems that have, I think, hindered the wider adoption of rain barrels. So I'll back up and talk about that organization again, the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, because they were the organization that was most responsible for creating Wisconsin's first EPA-approved watershed restoration plan. And it was for the Pike River watershed, mostly in Kenosha County, north of the city of Kenosha. Is the area that map is showing, parts of Racine County. this is a real milestone for the state of Wisconsin. It really haven't got enough credit. I'll pass around the plan and then the press release that Teddy so nicely sent to me in the Kenosha News. Extension through my program was involved in helping to get this planning effort going. And then we stuck with them through the initial citizen input phase and have been a resource throughout and continue to be a resource. They've got some things in the work. If I have time, I can talk about them. But I'll just pass around this plan. You want a time to look through the whole thing. It's a very dense document. But it lays out some recommendations for how this watershed can be protected in the future so it doesn't have a lot of stormwater issues. And so it can continue to be an asset when it comes to fishing and hiking and biking and recreation and maintain property values and just maintain a high quality of life in that part of the county. So encourage you all to, it's online, it's at this group's website. If you have any trouble finding it, I can certainly direct you that way. They recently just held a fundraiser. And what, as an extension agent, what this shows me is that we help get the initiative going, and then it kind of established a life of its own and has become very independent. So this to me is a great sign that they're out there, active, looking for funds to do their implementation. Anybody go to that, by the way? Anybody here familiar? You did. All right. How was it?
Very good.
Was it?
Yeah.
Good.
I forgot the CD.
Oh, great. Another program that I work on is called the Wisconsin Water Star Program. This is one I inherited from my colleague who retired over in the Rock River Basin. It's a program that tries to recognize communities that are doing outstanding work when it comes to water resource protection, and it rewards those communities by calling them water stars. There's various levels of attainment. You can be a bronze, a silver, or a gold water star. Bristol is a bronze water star in Kenosha. When you become a water star, then we like to talk about you and we give you a road sign. So.
Those are very nice.
Yeah.
Those are very nice.
Yeah. So more communities in Kenosha should get that and they can talk to me and I'll help them work through the online. It's an online community assessment. It's not that big a deal. But it's a challenge for a program like this to stay visible. And so one of the ways we've tried to stay visible is by doing professional development webinars on water resource topics. So we've been doing that for 3 years, but this year it was great to develop a partnership with another program that's kind of similar to ours, the Wisconsin Green Tier Legacy Communities Program, which is a program affiliated with several nonprofit organizations, Thousand Friends of Wisconsin, if you're familiar with them, but also has a strong connection to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and also the Wisconsin League of Municipalities. And so we've partnered with them. They were doing webinars, we were doing webinars, and just said, why don't we work together? This way people won't have to choose if our programs ever overlap, and it's just a more efficient use of government resources. So that's what we've done. And we're hoping to just increase our professionalism and continue to offer great webinars. In fact, our webinars were always in the fall. We did them every other week, and we did like 6 to 8. But now we're doing one a month. And I'll pass that handout around now. I would encourage you to go to our website that's listed here if you're interested in these programs. Our focus is on water resource management and other topics that involve municipal sustainability. Our next program is coming up next week. They're always on Thursday at noon. They're free for municipalities anyway. We're considering a fee structure for private sector folks. But the topic next week is going to be a look at the Milwaukee 6th Street Corridor Project, which is once again a multi-partner effort to kind of revitalize a street corridor that's a mix of residential and commercial and public space by putting in a whole bunch of we call it green infrastructure, things like rain gardens, like other kinds of water infiltration practices, but also involves lighting and energy conservation activities. So by all means, if you have the time, tune into those. And we get an announcement out about our spring series, which is coming up. So keep going. Stop me anytime if you have a question. So I talked about WaterStar. I think this might be my last slide. Oh no, I got a couple more. Locally, the way I connect with municipalities is through a group called the Clean Water Network. And this is a group that is managed by the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network, again, PikeWIN. It is a group of, I think, 17, maybe it's a little bit more than that, municipalities in Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha counties that have decided to cooperate on the public outreach component of their state municipal stormwater permit, sometimes called their MS4 permit, for a municipal separate storm sewer system. Kenosha, the county of Kenosha is one of the members of this group. And I help Root Pike WIN develop agendas for their meetings, choose locations, find speakers, and sometimes speak myself at this program. In particular, I'll be talking about WaterStar. This one's coming up next week on the 20th. And I'll also be reporting on the results of a survey that I did. We have access to, like I said, survey resources, and the kind of survey they needed here wasn't too complicated, so I was able to do it myself. So we're providing this service to these municipalities. I have that handout here. You can take a look at the list of communities on the top, and quite a few are in Kenosha County. So it's another example of how Extension's role is sometimes not so obvious. I mean, our logo's on these, but folks who attend these meetings know about us, and we're there. My program area is there. Maybe the biggest thing that this group did in terms of public awareness building is their Respect Our Waters campaign. And that's the little dog that's up there. Sparkle is the sassy water spaniel. Has anybody seen him on TV?
Yes.
You, a few of you?
I haven't.
Sparkles has got some really funny YouTube spots if you check him out. He's got an attitude, and it's visible in these little clips. I should have brought one. But anyway, Root Pike WIN and other organizations, because this is connected with the city of Milwaukee, they have a similar organization. They develop this campaign together, and they go out to events and they pass out these bookmarks and other things and dog cleanup bags and stuff like that, trying to encourage people to do what they can to protect water quality. And I just, in all my years of talking about this stuff, I just think that's so important, because really addressing our water resource problems does really come down to the individual actions we all make, the choices we make when it comes to how we take care of our individual properties, whether they're big farms, mini farmettes, or an apartment in a developed area. We all have a role to play. And a group like this that's working with municipalities is so important too, because municipalities have such an important role to play when it comes to protecting water quality as well. One of our perennial topics, if we go back to the webinar series, every year we talk about salt application or de-icing, because we're learning more and more about how this salt is building up in our waterways and our groundwater. And that's a concern. And so when it comes time to do something, you know, about how we manage our salt, who's going to need to do something first? Well, it's going to be the municipalities. They're the front lines, you know. And so that's why I think groups like the Clean Water Network are just critical to expediting that process from awareness to action. So that's all my water stuff. If we went all the way back, you may recall I touched on a bunch of different program areas. I'm just going to mention forestry real quick, because every year I do a forestry conference. I coordinate it with several other partners.
I hope it happens again next year, a little uncertainty. Extension used to be the fiscal sponsor for this, but it's a role that we weren't very well suited for, so we backed out of it. And the new fiscal sponsor for this is the Sino Woodland Education Center, south of Bristol. I'm not sure if that's Kenosha County or not.
I think it's actually across the border.
It's across the border in Walworth County, right?
Very close, but it is in Walworth, yeah.
Sino is investigating whether or not they should partner, though, with the Kenosha Racine Land Trust, because a lot of the people on the two organizations' boards, it's a lot of the same people on those two organization boards. And I'm really hoping that after they get through that transition, they'll want to keep serving as fiscal sponsor for this event. Because even though this is a regional event, we do pull a good portion of our people from the southeast portion of the state, including Kenosha County. It's an event that's targeted at folks who own anywhere from 5 to, you know, hundreds of acres of woodland property, and it gives them tips on how to manage that property for everyone's benefit. So let's hope it continues. And that's it. I did want to talk about, I guess, a couple of other publications that I brought. I think I brought these last year. I think this was hot off the presses last year. This is the Explore and Restore brochure for the Pike River. This is a theme that a colleague of mine developed, Explore and Restore Your Great Lakes. And she developed a few of these for some watersheds up in the Sheboygan County area. And then I kind of took the theme and ran with it for the Pike River. And so I've got a bunch of these over on the table there. I think I'm just gonna leave those, but please take as many as you want. If you need more, I can get you more. And spread the word around about the good work that's happening in the Pike River. It's really a very interesting brochure, I think. We just did one for the Root River, and although that doesn't touch on Kenosha County, actually a little tiny piece does, over by Apple Holler. I think some of you may enjoy this, so there's a few of those over there as well. And then this is I hate to say this is probably 12 years old now, but this is on the Fox River watershed. It's what we call a recreational asset map. It shows the Fox River watershed, so it includes Kenosha County down here, also includes the Des Plaines, and it highlights the recreational assets in the watershed. By recreational assets, we specifically mean the canoe routes, the fishing locations, the biking and hiking trails, the wildlife areas, the boat launches where public access is permitted, and the parks, and gives you directions on how to get there, what kind of facilities they have, whether there's a fee or not. So I have more of these. I left about 10 over on the table, but if you need more, just let me know. I don't know if we'll ever be able to reprint this. It probably should be reprinted. It's been a goal of mine to work with the tourist organizations to see if they have any money to maybe help get something like this online. So far, I just haven't been able to get around to doing that. But it's another example of the kind of work that we do. And I mean, the theory behind this is if you want people to protect a resource, they need to know about it, number one, and make a connection that's valuable to them. And so hopefully this is one step in that direction.
Andy, if you ever do get money to reprint it, Kenosha County has new bike paths, or certainly improved bike paths, that we'd want to make sure got included in there, because we're feeling really proud of the efforts that's going to bike paths.
So, Well, thank you.
I was wondering, as long as we had an expert here, maybe Kim wanted to mention the concerns that your constituent mentioned about having that pond water pumped into the lake, and if it's a problem with the not the bacteria, but what do you call it?
The microbes, yeah.
Microbes.
Yeah. It's over in Twin Lakes. It's the Nipper Sinkhole. When it gets too high, when everything melts and it starts getting too high, the DNR has told them that they need to bring in an industrial pump to pump it into Lake Benedict. Mm-hmm. And the people on Lake Benedict, of course, are very upset about this, because they think that the microbes from this Nipper Sinkhole are going to be pumped into Lake Benedict, and they're going to be here tonight to talk to us about it. So,
what is the Nipper Sinkhole?
It's a bowl. It's like a depression, sort of like a retaining pond.
Yeah.
Like a retention pond for a subdivision.
Oh, okay.
But
Unfortunately, when it gets too high, then it goes over top of the roads and.
So in order to avoid that hazard, they're having it being pumped.
Pump it out, yep.
Boy, without more information, I just don't feel comfortable.
Those are like microbes in, is that usually a problem? Has it been a problem?
Not that I'm aware of, no. No, no, I'm not aware of any microbes that people be worried about.
Yeah.
When it comes to human health. Now, what people do get worried about is the spread of invasive species. If they're worried about like spreading seeds from one pond to another, or if there were like rusty crayfish in there, but it sounds like it's a different concern. So I wouldn't be able to comment on what kind of microbes could be of a concern. if you do run into an issue like that and you just can't find the DNR person in contact, you know, you feel like you're hitting a brick wall, you're more than welcome to call me, and I could try to connect you with the right person or try to maybe help clarify the situation. Chances are I'm not going to know more about it than you are, but you never know, and maybe I can just be that person who can help push you along to the right person. So it's a great question. I wish I could give you more insights. If you learn more tonight and you have questions, give me a call. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your one slide had talked about runoff, rain runoff. Is the most of the problem where the water doesn't go in is because of the surface area of your house and then also like paved driveways?
Right.
Is that where most of the problem is?
Yeah.
And then, for example, like the city of Milwaukee, because that's the only one that pops in my head, is where they have their storm sewers, like people's homes hooked up to the storm sewers as opposed to going into their yard. Is that most of the problem? Because like out where I live, it drains into the ditch. And is that a good thing? Is that, does that affect the runoff a lot? Or is draining into the ditch helping keep your water tables?
The way I look at the issue, rural or urban, we all have a role to play. And that situation in Milwaukee, which is not unique to Milwaukee, other older cities like Cleveland and Philadelphia, Chicago, have the same situation where their storm sewers are sometimes combined with their sanitary sewers. But that's sort of a separate issue. But when you look at why do we have runoff problems today, it's because we've modified the landscape so much to facilitate the kind of development we like. We don't like water standing around. We like to get rid of it as quick as possible. But if you were to like go back in time and come to this area before we all got here, before European settlers got here, you would have encountered a much wetter area, a lot more wetlands and wet prairies, and not so much with defined streams, but with kind of meandering streams connecting them loosely. We've just changed the landscape by first harvesting the trees and then putting in ditches and drain tiles and straightening streams to move that water as quick as possible. I mean, that's just what we did, you know. I'm not blaming anybody, but I would have done it too. But now we know that even in rural areas, we're moving the water very quickly instead of trying to get it to soak in, which is really what we wanted to do. In rural areas, you don't have that problem of hard surfaces like rooftops and a lot of paved areas like you do in urban areas. So in urban areas, we don't have the straightened streams so much, although we have some of it. In urban areas, the problem is we just don't have soft surfaces for the water to soak in. But both areas have kind of land choices that were made in the past that prevent the infiltration of runoff now. And the practices we talk about, the best management practices that the DNR talks about and I try to help people be aware of, are designed to kind of change that. Person by person, farm by farm, subdivision by subdivision. And I think we've made great progress in the 20 years that I've been doing this education. It's just, as we learn more, we realize more how challenging the issues are. And it's not like we're standing still either. When I got started those two decades ago, there weren't as many people here. There wasn't as much development. If everything had stayed static in terms of development and population, we probably would have made even more progress, but the fact is the pressures we put on the landscape have only increased and are only increasing. So we're kind of running as fast as we can, and the situation is making us work even harder, you know? So we're running to keep up is what I'm trying to say. Does that get at your question a little bit? I don't work so much on the rural end of things anymore. But I have colleagues who do. In Extension, we have a program called Discovery Farms, and we have a connection with them where they try to demonstrate what farms can do to protect water quality.
Thank you.
Anything else?
What remains to be done on the Pike River restoration? Because, you know, the dam's been removed and
right.
the embankment's been stabilized and things. And now it's just kind of allowing it to
yeah.
grow in, if you will, right?
Well, I haven't been super connected with the implementation, but the plan, I think, the most challenging aspects of that plan are going to involve preserving areas for water to soak in. And some of those areas are areas that are privately owned by farmers, other people who own big chunks of land. And it's going to be finding a way, I think, to work with those folks to preserve the land from development without, you know, essentially robbing them of the value of that land when developed, you know. So it's going to be trying to find some compromise there. Because that's what a watershed like that needs, is to protect the uplands so that when we do get big rainstorms or snow melts, the water doesn't all rush off at once. It has time to pool and soak in. There's some areas in that watershed where there's stream bank erosion, so they need to stabilize the stream bank. Those are more direct kinds of projects, but ultimately, and I think that's what the press release that went around with the plan talks about, is the need to work with those local landowners to try to find some kind of mutually agreeable solution. I hinted at some of the work that I might get involved in the future. Root Pike Wind has asked for my assistance and my program area's assistance, because in the town of Summers, they're trying to get grant funding for a pilot project that would try to work with the landowners in a little sub-watershed of the pike and see if they can, in a very small portion of that watershed, find a way of bringing the landowners together and working with them to get them to develop the best option to meet the goals of the watershed plan, but also meet their goals as landowners. And so that's an intriguing idea from my program's point of view, because it's something we've tried to do up north with farmers in very rural areas, but down here in a more urban area, we really haven't tried to do that. So that might be something in the future, yeah, on a smaller scale. It's a tricky situation.
Well, it is, because, you know, development and progress is a good thing,
yeah.
economically, but
yeah.
certainly it's a balance of it. And, you know, in agriculture, they want to get the water off quickly in the spring, but they want to stay in the summer. So you figure that one out,
yeah.
You're really beyond something there.
Yeah.
Because they got to get planted, but then they, of course,
yeah.
want, yeah. want to retain it.
Yeah. You know, we're better with development now, too. So I don't necessarily think the solution is just keeping the land in farming or just keeping it in parkland. I think some of that area could be developed if the development is extra sensitive to how it manages its stormwater. And through my work with that webinar series, I've had the good fortune of working with a lot of stormwater engineers. And it is amazing how rapidly that field is evolving in terms of finding ways to store water. If you go up to Hales Corners, there's a new Walmart, and it's like at the corner of 124th or Highway 100 and 43. It's on the northeast corner. And you wouldn't know it when you go to that Walmart, but when you park, you know, on their giant parking lot, it looks just like a regular parking lot, but underneath that parking lot are giant plastic water-holding tanks. And so when it rains, the water rushes in, it fills those tanks, and then it slowly drains, you know, over time. But those tanks take that flush. So, because I guess Walmart had space constraints, they couldn't put a detention pond somewhere, they didn't want to, it was cheaper, whatever. So I think we're going to see more stuff like that, you know, more innovative ways to store water on our commercial properties, also our individual residential properties.
Yeah.
So I think some of the solution will be there too.
Yeah, certainly, this summer's Walmart has a huge detention pond that there's a big rain, but they had room to do it.
They had room, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm over time.
Yep, just going to give you the signal.
All right. Well, I'm going to sneak out. Is that okay?
Yep, that's
I'll leave
fine.
Some of my cards over there, too. And those are extras? Okay.
Yep.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Very
thank you, Andy. Appreciate it.
Thank you all.
Okay, we have our youth and governance update.
Yes, so let me tell you again to recap. We received 174 nominations from 10 high schools. Every youth nominated did receive a letter encouraging them to participate and apply for our youth and governance program. We received 23 applications from 8 high schools. So let me put this in perspective. Last year we received 60. Mm-hmm. So we received a lot less. Now, could be lots of reasons for that. I was chatting with our 2 youth and governance members to say, you know, does the word get out that it's so competitive it's not worth applying? Is it the mandatory youth and governance tour, the bus tour that day? Could be a combination of lots of things. Who knows? But there we go. That's what we have. We have 23 applications. We have previously interviewed 26, so we have slots for 26. So we're well within. Every youth will now get an invitation to apply, interview. A challenge we have is that Westosia Central High School and Wilmot High School have spring break the week of our interviews. Same week you're going to Las Vegas there, Supervisor Dodge. They are going on spring break. So I would encourage you to consider an option to allow those youth from those 2 high schools to participate in an interview via technology. So we could Skype them in, or we could have a conference call and allow them to participate in a conference call. So if they are traveling and are not in Kenosha County, either one of those 2 nights, they could still participate in the interview.
Have you encountered any one of them seen?
I have had 2 of them so far call me and say, did you know this is spring break? I'm going to be in Florida. And I was like, oh, no, really.
And I think it's kind of important to do this because I'd hate to penalize any of the youth because we didn't pay attention to the dates. And
well, we've always had our dates the same.
Right.
Oh, no worries.
Okay.
Our dates have been the same, and yeah, so schools just changed their spring break.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I would say we could do it on the same night if possible.
In fact, we can only do the same night,
right,
because we don't have the conference room both nights. We're in the auditor's conference room on the first night, and it doesn't have technology capabilities.
Awesome.
So we can only do Skype and conference calls on Wednesday. So they would be told that. If you choose that option, you only can choose Wednesday night.
What time are they? Okay.
5:30. We start at 5:30 and go till 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
Five
yeah.
o'clock.
So they'll probably have to miss like a little bit of their dinner time or whatever.
They might, yeah, depending on where they're
yeah.
at. Yeah. So if you agree to that, if someone would make a motion, we'll make it official and then I'll have the letters ready to go tomorrow.
So do you plan to give them a specific time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We would have
They
to.
Sign up for a time. They say my interview slot is 6:45. Yep.
I make a motion to approve allowing
Skyping.
Skyping or whatever technology or conference call.
Okay.
Whatever for their phone.
Okay.
Telephone interviews.
Great.
Do I have a second?
Second. Is this the planning meeting?
In the hearing room across the hall.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was Supervisor Dodge? Okay.
Nope. Skolinski.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Why did I think it sounded like it came from over here?
It did.
You did also.
Okay.
Yes, question?
I just want to let you know because I've done the phone conference before. You'll need to grab the phone.
We're not here. We're downtown.
Oh, oh okay.
We're in the county
right,
building. No, we're in the county building.
Sorry, I thought you were in this room. No. I was like, if you're in this room, you're going to need to.
No, we're downtown.
Okay.
Yeah, it screws up everyone when we go downtown.
They used to be here. That's why I was just like,
why do we always do them all here?
Yeah.
No, we've always done them downtown.
Yeah.
I don't know, but why?
Good question. You could always change it.
Well, in this case, with technology, it'll be nice to do that.
The reality is
yeah.
the center.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it gets them acquainted with where the county board meetings are and where the location of the county board, because they do come there for their orientation and their, yeah, and their, yeah,
Well, this is the only committee that meets here, or Public Works.
Public Works, yeah.
Yeah, so there are counties, not the committees, the committees meet in all the county buildings.
You want this book?
Oh.
I can get it back to you.
Okay, so I have a first and a second, youth and governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, we'll do some Skyping.
Thank you. Now I need to know which night you can interview. Supervisor Dodge has just indicated he is not available that entire week. I have Supervisor Decker only on Wednesday, correct?
I have a human services meeting that same evening, probably in the conference room.
That's on Tuesday, that's why Tuesday we got booted, so you're.
I'm going to be there, so if you, you know.
You sure you're gonna have a meeting?
Well, Mike I talked to Supervisor Underhill before he came into the office to let me know he couldn't be here tonight, and he said he would take the opposite night you couldn't make.
Okay.
So he said if Supervisor Decker's there Wednesday, he'd do Tuesday.
Yep, Wednesday works for me.
So Supervisor Skalitsky, can you make both evenings?
Yeah, sure, what nights?
Tuesday, March 25th, and Wednesday, March 26th.
I think so, yep.
Then we've got our team.
It might be spring break, are you, you know.
It is my, it's my spring break, and I didn't even think of it.
So we now have our five, because both our youth and governance members can make both nights, so we're set. We got it filled. So I will, this is what will happen, is that I will Donna will scan all the applications, and you'll only get the applications for the night you're interviewing, okay? So you'll have those ahead of time. I need to remind everyone, particularly our youth and governance members, that these applications are confidential. So you are not to share any information, you're gonna have access to information on these candidates, and you have to treat it confidentially, okay? So I'm moving that forward, all right?
Quick question, Mike?
Yes?
Is your daughter a sophomore or a junior?
My daughter is, well, which daughter?
The one that's in the program.
She's a senior.
She graduated already.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
She's done.
Okay. Is your other one?
I don't know, she's so doggone busy, I don't.
Okay.
I think next year she'll, because just being a sophomore.
Okay.
Even though I know juniors can.
Yeah.
She's got a lot of irons in the fryer, so she doesn't need anymore.
Okay.
Unless she.
Yeah, we always want to just be careful of.
There are no conflicts of interest, Chairman. I also want you to know that as a result of some of the discussion from last year's interviews, and a suggestion was made that we create an interview tip sheet to just give youth a little bit more, here's what you might want to think about before you come into the room. I actually have done that, so yeah, I see you nodding. Many of you gave that good feedback. So if you two don't mind, if I run it by you, would you two give me some feedback?
Of course.
But sure. I need it right away because we're gonna mail these letters tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. I take interviews.
Pressure.
Okay, very good.
No problem.
I think that's all for youth and governance.
Okay.
I have a question. Good. Is anyone that is doing the program this year reapplying?
No. There are no reapplications.
No reapplications.
Most of them are seniors. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a little concerning that we don't have that many applicants, though.
Well, there's two ways to look at it. There's only 14 slots, so there are fewer youth disappointed.
That's true.
I mean, you think
and
about
less,
it.
Less work for you and Amy to go
well,
through all those applications.
The work isn't an issue. I worry about the kids. I'm the blue who worry about all the kids and how, right. You know, that's fewer youth who come away feeling not that I didn't get a chance to participate, so.
Well, you had a 13% response rate. How does that compare to previous years, about right? And I mean from noms to applications.
No, yeah. No, last year the nominations were.
Less nominations, but.
Where's my cumulative statistics?
There were less nominations, but more responses with applicants, with the applications.
I don't have
like 60
it. We had 60 applications last year and over 200 nominations.
Partially to someone saying, but then a lot of the people I talked to who I nominated who said that they didn't turn it back in, where it was because of other
time
differences as well.
Yeah.
Like not more so specifically the summer thing.
Okay.
And not necessarily the bus tour thing.
Yeah, no, it wasn't necessarily that, it was what else they had going on.
Yeah, you gotta balance your time.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know, if they're in sports and band and this and active in their community and church.
Right.
And, I mean, you just gotta have some downtime.
Okay, educator programs. What do we have? We have two of them. Jeannie?
For culture, we're very busy. Of course, we wish we were busier with the weather being it is, and we're not. But
It only 8 degrees tonight.
Spring in the Gardening, our big program was held on March 8th, last Saturday. We had a 10% increase in attendance, so we're up to like 275, give or take a few. We had to close several of the sessions because we were just packed full. So it was great, and we had a lot of good feedback, including the meal was good, everything like that, so everything was very positive. So things ran very well and very organized. I looked through some of the surveys here, and most of them said, good program, can't wait for it to happen again next year. Why don't you do it twice a year? I'm like, whoa, slow down. A lot of work to be able to do it twice a year, but I think it went very, very well. The other thing I want to report on is the All-American Selections Garden. We're working with the Wisconsin Landscape Contractors Association, the Southeast chapter. They're very interested in helping us out with this, which would be very nice. I know I have to talk to some more other county people to see how we're going to get this all worked together, but I think we're getting more community involvement with this, and that's really what we're looking for, and it's going to be great. Snowshoe County Center Garden will hopefully, if the weather ever breaks, we'll have a good start on the season, and that'll be, you know, another avenue for people to be looking at gardening here in Snowshoe.
Where is that garden?
Great.
It's on the northwest side of the building, kind of by the park.
Oh, here, right here.
Yeah.
That one I was out there, sure. I didn't know if there was multiple locations.
Okay. We're going to add to it, extend it. So if you
want to
help us
out. You didn't hear his lilac story. Oh, no. You don't want to help.
Yeah. I didn't grow back.
Yeah. Okay, Beth?
Just a couple. The last 2 weeks, 4-H was very busy. We had the Kenosha County 4-H Pinewood Derby, where we had 120 participants that raced. So if you take that 120 and then you add grandparents and parents, the hearing room was really packed, but everybody enjoyed it, had a great time. We had a little bit of computer glitch, but got through it, and we were all done and said by 8:30, so not too bad with the 120, and they all raced 3 times. And then the following Tuesday, we had the Brass School. Their PTO sponsors of Pinewood Derby, so I was over there assisting that one. They had about 50 kids register, and about 30 to 35 kids showed up for that one. So that one, once again, was pretty well packed in their gymnasium and stuff. And then the last but not least, we just had 4-H Project Day, which Supervisor Decker nicely did Ukrainian eggs for us. And that was packed with, we had a total of 55 youth. And then by the time you put in all the presenters that were helping and some parents that stuck around, we had 20 of them, so all in all, we had about 70 to 75 people running throughout the KCC on Saturday, so it was wonderfully attended again, too. So the projects for most of the youth are being very busily kicked off. A lot of them are meeting the month of March. If you have to look at the calendar, all next week literally is all 4-H programs meeting. And then the other thing that the after school ambassadors, the Trumper students, which started last November, they have about 220 hours in so far. Harborside, that just started in February, we kind of had a late start with them. They already have 100 hours in. And then Carthage is sitting about 60 hours and working with Frank over there. And then Bradford just got started the middle end of February, and they already have about 50 to 60 hours in that too. I kind of just roughly estimated it and come quite. So that program is taking off and going wonderfully. So I'm still looking, hopefully, to get into Indian Trail as the next one. Otherwise, I think we're pretty well established in almost all the high schools. So we're looking at trying to expand out in the high schools and then get into more some of the elementary schools with those high schoolers.
Cool.
Great.
Okay, Teddy.
I have great news. I'm going to announce that we have a youth development educator who is starting April 15th. Carmelo Davila. 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 I've got to learn to say his name correctly. I want to remind all of us that that position focus is different from what John held. So I'm going to have to encourage you all to think of this as it is a different position. So we can't hold Carmelo accountable for the work that John did. OK? Okay, so I just need to keep saying that over and over again. And it's reminding myself as well. So that we can't compare him to John, and we shouldn't compare him to John. So I want to set him up for success. And I know how beloved John was, but I think it's important that all of us remember Carmelo is his own person, and he will have a different job. And so we need to support that in a very positive way. His main focus is to address the achievement gap for youth of color, and primarily in the city of Kenosha, Kenosha Unified School District. It's a huge issue. It came out as the number one issue in our visioning sessions. But he also still does provide responsibility for the entire youth development program. And I'm reminding you of the chart that has all of the areas. So Bethany has responsibility for 4-H. YAR is with our coordinator, Brian Ferrarik, Youth and Governance, Youth Quest, Tech Wizards, and After School Ambassadors. There are program coordinators for all of those. So Carmelo will really have responsibility for guiding, coaching, and mentoring all the folks in this area. In all these areas. So he'll, on top of addressing the achievement gap. So the young man will have a lot of work ahead of him.
Okay. If I may. I have met Carmelo. One of the things that really, really impressed me about him was, and while we are not supposed to compare him to John, he has the same enthusiasm that John did. And that is awesome. He just blew me away when I met him in the interview process. So.
He's very enthusiastic. He's very happy to be here.
Yes.
He's called me several times. He's very anxious.
I'm sure.
He's ready to get going, so this will be great. I also just want to quickly share that we've had 21 applications for our Racine Kenosha Nutrition Education Program Coordinator. We reviewed those yesterday. Preliminary interviews for that position will be April 1st, with final interviews May 8th. So we'll soon have all the seats on the bus filled again. Yes.
Don't be leaving.
Yes, nobody be leaving. Yes. So I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. All right, anything else? No? Okay. We will adjourn this portion of it and head to the other room.